evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. Anybody else want to come take a seat? We are going to get started at ASPE. If you want to continue conversations, please take them out into our hall. Thank you. I'm Meredith Mendelson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Marine Resources. We are holding a public hearing this evening to take public comment. The Department of Marine Resources intends to provide the Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, with an assessment of the potential impacts of a project proposed in connection to a pending Natural Resource Protection Act permit filed by Nordic Aquafarms of Belfast. DMR decided to hold this hearing to take public comment in order to address a procedural error that was alleged in the DEP proceeding regarding DMR's assessment. Since that time, our understanding of the project has changed since the time we noticed the hearing. We did not understand that there was to be a haul route originally when we noticed this hearing. We had understood that all material that might come out from the siting of the pipelines would be taken upland directly from the point of the siting overland. Since that time, we've been made aware there is a haul route. And so that does bring it more into the scope of what we typically do for a dredge hearing. So regardless, we are here this evening to take public comment on the impacts of fishing activity in the area to be impacted by the siting of pipelines as proposed and along the haul route to the point of disposal, which will be upland from that point. So that will be summarized shortly. DMR based its decision to hold this hearing in part on the size and scope of the overall project, and will provide an assessment on those potential impacts in order to assist DEP to have an adequate record for the consideration of Nordic's application. With regard to the scope of this hearing, DMR will take public comment tonight only on the impacts to fishing activity, where the pipes will be installed, and impacts caused by vessel traffic on the haul route to the disposal site or offload point for the upland disposal. DMR has already provided comments to DEP on the impacts to habitat and fisheries, and therefore will not be taking comment related to those impacts at this hearing. The record will be closed at the close of the hearing, and DMR will provide summary comments to DEP based on input received in writing prior to, or verbally or in writing during this hearing. At this point, the public hearing will proceed in two parts. The first part begins with a brief Q&A session, and I think Elizabeth Ransom, I believe, is going. I'm sorry.
Lauren
from Chibro, I'm sorry, I should have clarified that from the year before, will explain the proposed activities, and then members of the public will have an opportunity to ask clarifying questions only about the proposed activity as described. The purpose of the Q&A is to help you understand what the applicant is proposing. It is not the time to offer feedback on the proposed activities. You'll have the opportunity to do that during the second part of the hearing. And then when the Q&A session ends, we'll open the record. You'll have an opportunity to put your comment on the record. I will take comments in random order as people raise their hands and come up. There were two people who signed in initially, and we'll start with them just out of courtesy. For the clarity of the record, please note that the comment period is not time for an exchange with the department. We are simply listening to your feedback, and then we'll take the next comment. Please be sure to ask any questions during the Q&A. We're also going to limit public comment to 3 minutes per person in order to ensure that everybody has an opportunity who would like one to speak tonight. So now, I guess I will turn to Lauren, if I could.
Everybody. I'm Lauren Walsh. I'm with Chimbro Corporation. I'm Chimbro's environmental manager. Chimbro has been working with the Department of Marine Resources. Can everybody hear me? Okay. I'm sorry. I'm working with Nordic Aquafarms to establish construction means and methods for the installation of the pipeline route and the pipeline itself. So I'm going to speak a little bit about those construction means and methods to install that pipeline within the intertidal zone, as well as the subtitle and then the deeper water zone, and speak a little bit about the haul route for the excess excavated sediments for that project. So the installation of the pipeline itself will take place in, it's basically three phases. You have the intertidal zone, which will be done off of a timber mat access road placed out into the mudflats into the intertidal zone. That timber mat access road will be placed in one route initially. That'll be the first stage of the construction. The excavators to install that section of the pipeline will then work out from the basically the mean low water line back up to the shoreline with the installation of that axle of the pipeline. So they're working backwards, they'll remove that access road as they go. The next phase of that would be the subtidal and the in-water work. The mudflat work, the intertidal zone, would be done during low tide, so there would be limited impacts from washing of sediments into the area outside of the 100-foot access route for the pipeline. The turbidity curtains would be used in all instances during water, high water activity. Timber mats would be placed, and they'd stay in place, they'd be anchored in place through the tide cycles.
Sorry, could you put that speaker closer because I'm just...
Sure.
Muscle
mic a little closer.
So the timber mats would stay in place during, I can hear myself now, thank you. The timber mats would stay in place through those tide cycles. They'd be anchored in place, allowing for less movement of those sediments during activity or during the tide cycles. The deeper water work would be done off of barges. So we have two different types of barges. We have jack-up barges as well as standard spud barges. The jack-up barges stay in place. They don't ground out onto the mudflats or onto the any other. So the jack-up barges do not ground out onto the mudflats, but the spud barges could possibly do that. We've accounted for that within our work plan and within our temporary impacts to the intertidal zone. Dredge curtains would be used, so sediments would not, turbidity generated from the excavation activities would not migrate beyond our work area. We'd use a Long Beach excavator with a closed dredge bucket or an environmental bucket, depending on what the sediment types are like, again, to reduce any turbidity generation possibility. If those turbidity curtains are not shown to be effective, we would also do some additional monitoring with a meter to assess what amount of turbidity is being generated beyond those turbidity curtains, if that were to be an issue. And then institute additional mitigation measures at that point. So those additional measures could be additional turbidity curtains, it could be a different type of a sediment barrier, there's various options out there. The excavated material would be brought up from the bottom using the closed dredge bucket and placed onto a scow barge. The scow barge is shown over here. So this is just an estimated drawing right now. So the final design drawings for the scow barge and the containment system have not been completed. This is just an example of what we are planning. It's also an example of what has been used on other projects in the past. So the scow barge has a concrete jersey barrier containment system with filter fabric lined. The filter fabric will filter out any sediments that could wash off of the excavated dredge material. So the excavator will bring the material up from the bottom, place it onto the scow barge. We have basically three layers of turbidity barriers. We have the filter fabric. We have a filter sock barrier that would go around the base of the timber mats and the concrete barrier. So the material that would come out from underneath those jersey barriers would be filtered. And then in addition to that, there's also a turbidity, a dredge curtain, is what they call it, around the barge itself. So that any material that would come down would be filtered as well. It's our feeling at this point in time, looking at the sediment analysis, that tertiary filtration measure would keep turbidity to a minimum. And that would be in place at all times. In addition, there would also be a turbidity barrier, you know, standard turbidity curtain anchored around the work area at a time. So this system would be used for the entire length of the pipeline. So from the intertidal zone, where you're working in the primarily in the low tide time period, all the way out through the subtidal and the deep water zones. Once the material is placed onto the barges, it will then be transported roughly, this is the route here, and I think some of these were handed out, I believe. So this is the sediment transport route. It's about 6.5 miles. It will take roughly 1 hour for our barge, as we're estimating, 1 hour for a push boat to move that barge from the work zone out to Mat Point, where we would then transfer the material from the barges onto a truck, and it would be hauled to a landside license disposal facility. The material will likely need to be amended to remove some of the excess water. Usually this is done with a cement product. So that would be done most likely near Mat Point. So at that location, we again secure the barge. The cement product would be mixed with the sediments would be mixed with the cement until it passes what's called a paint filter test. And that's essentially to make sure that material does not drip out onto the roadways as it's hauled overland to the disposal site. So it will bind up any excess moisture in that material before it's transported overland. There's roughly 20,000 cubic yards of material that will be removed and transported through this haul route. So the actual excavation activity is roughly 35, but a lot of that material is going to go back into the trench itself, along with stone and the pipe itself. There's some compaction that needs to be done in the intertidal zone as well. So roughly 20,000 cubic yards of material will need to be disposed of. Again, these are estimates at this point in time, pending the final sign of that pipeline. So we're looking at an hour trip each way. Roughly 110 to 130 trips will be made, round trips, to move that amount of material. So our calculations roughly, this type of a scow barge containment system will hold about 130 cubic yards each pass. And that's an estimate, depends on exactly what is removed from the trench area itself.
I have a question. Lauren, could you tell us, do you know if the transport will happen around the clock, or will it be in daylight hours only?
At this point in time, we're planning daylight hours.
Any other clarifying questions?
A couple.
If I could ask you, I'm sorry to do this, we only have one microphone, can we hand it back and forth? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll stand up.
Has there been any subsequent tests of the actual sediments on the intertidal zone since the ones presented by at the BEP hearing?
I'm sorry, that's not relevant to the subject matter of the hearing. I'm not going to entertain questions on everything related to this permit.
The dewatering is not part of this, and the barge trips aren't part of it. So in order to know how many barge trips, we need to know what the sediment's like and what's going back into the hole. So the estimates that I heard were 5,000 to 10,000 cubic yards going somewhere. And now I find out that it's 20,000 cubic yards, and that depends on what the sediments actually are. So I'm a little confused. Aren't we talking about how many barge trips and what the conditions are that create that?
I suppose we could talk about the volume of the barge trips, if that's what you're asking.
I'm asking about the volume of the barge trips and what actual testing has been done subsequent to the testing that has been presented to the DEP.
I'm not going to entertain a question about the testing of the sediment, because I don't believe that that is relevant to the question about the impact of the haul.
Elizabeth Ransom. Yes. I can answer, Paul. There have been no additional tests since the BEP hearing. That's your question. But there, as you are aware, there were tests during the application process that Timber is using to make their estimates of how many trips and what the rough volumes might be. And Lauren was very clear that what she presented tonight are estimates.
Thanks.
Yes, my question is, you talked about it being sent to a facility somewhere. Is that on the bay? That is this, for example, over on Kidder Point, a local place, or on Sears Island? Where is it going?
The material would likely go to a licensed landfill.
Right.
So it would be, for instance, Crossroads Norwich Walk Landfill. The furthest away would be New Hampshire.
Not Juniper Ridge. Or...
Possibly Juniper Ridge.
So there's no you don't have anywhere set yet.
No, that would be determined at the time of disposal. So when we remove that material, you have to analyze it and have it approved.
And that's a DEP solid waste disposal permit. That has nothing to do with this.
Well, I wanted to make sure it wasn't on Stockton Harbor that erodes right into the bay. So.
The next question.
Two clarifying questions. One is, what season of the year would you do this, and how long do you think it would take?
So the season would depend on a lot of what we're discussing here. So there would be some time of year restrictions that would be in place, probably winter season, November through March, April. And I'm sorry, was your other question?
How long will the whole process of from start to finish doing the pipe and then being completely done?
Roughly four to 6 months for the whole thing.
Will you be able to tell? I'm very familiar with this mud flat area.
When I walk out there, if you lay this pipe, will I be able to tell? Will I see anything?
So when we do the excavation and we put the pipe in and put the additional material back in, we will be using a survey so that you won't see a hump in the land. It would be brought back to the original topography.
When was Nordic Aqua Farms or Chimbro, when did you become aware that you were going to be taking 110 to 130 haul trips to Mack Point? And I have a follow-up.
Are you asking when we determined the offloading location?
No.
When did you become aware that you were going to be following this haul route, since this is the first night any of us are hearing of it? I'm asking when you became aware that you were going to be taking 110 to 130 haul trips of this sediment to Mack Point.
I think we knew the amount of material that was going to be transported. The location was under discussion and under review. As of about 2 weeks ago, we settled on this particular location as it's the closest.
To clarify, then on February 14th, you knew this?
It is
very relevant to this, because we have not been given any opportunity for notice of this haul route to Lobsterman. You are closing this record at the end of this meeting. People are not being given a written comment opportunity, including Lobsterman, who will be affected by this haul route, none of which knew it. And when you filed the notice of this hearing on February 14th, this haul route was not included, but apparently the applicant knew about it. And I would like that dealt with.
I am not going to entertain that kind of attitude in this hearing. I'm going to be quite candid with you. We are not going to have that kind of a conversation. We are taking a public comment this evening on any impact of fishing activity in this area, and that is inclusive of anything. Please sit down, Ms. Tucker.
I'm going to request that lobstermen be given an opportunity to file written comments to this for the next 10 days.
I will consider that request at the end of the hearing. We are taking comment broadly on all fishing activity in the area. I hope that fishermen who are impacted in this area will have been able to come to this hearing, will have participated, will have been here. I do see a few fishermen in the area who I know fish actively here. I do see people who I know to be interested in this topic. So I'm hopeful that they'll be able to comment on their activity in this area.
Any other clarifying questions, Becky?
Yes. The turbidity curtain that you've described, sorry, I'm in the way. What happens with the material, the 15,000 cubic yards that is not going on the barges? Does that go inside the curtain, outside the curtain? The description that I've read is that it will be washed by waves and then put back on the. So I'm just curious.
Sure. So it's going to depend on the different work area. So if you're in the intertidal zone, that excavated material, everything from the trench location is going to be put onto timber mats or onto barges. Then it's going to be put back. Whatever needs to be put back will be put back. The excess material will be hauled away, as noted. If you're in the subtidal zone, so there is going to be some of that will be pushed to the side. Some will be excavated. It depends on the exact location of work.
I guess.
And then it'll be put back. And if I'm answering your question.
So, no, I mean, I just want to know, is it inside the curtain or outside the curtain?
Okay.
And what happens in the materials as you dewater it for the toxins that will go through to the water? How is that going to be filtered out?
So the turbidity will be filtered through the curtains, so we'll have that tertiary levels. All work will be inside either the turbidity curtain around the work area itself, as well as the dredge curtain, which is a heavier duty curtain, which would be around the barge for the dewatering, I believe that you're referring to.
So I guess I'm wondering what the size of the screening is. I mean, is it what can get through that screening?
I don't have that information.
That would be very important, particularly because we know about the mercury that's there. So I don't know how you're going to filter that out through a filter, unless it's extremely small, and then I don't know how it's going to work with 130 cubic yards.
And Cotter with North Cocker Farms. We did talk to several people about this today because of that question that we figured would come up. The answer is that the turbidity system that's proposed is used very often, and it's measured by, its effectiveness is measured by the turbidity outside the work zone. So that's why we anticipate measuring the turbidity outside the work zone to make sure that the material is captured the way it's proposed. But it is a common system that's used in similar materials all over the bay, and we think that it's going to do a very good job of making sure that the material is contained, especially with the several layers that it's going to be going through.
I guess I'm just not satisfied that that's going to get the mercury out of it. So I don't. I mean, what
okay, this is a comment. I'm going to ask you to hold that, Becky, if you would, please. Okay. Other comments, clarifying questions about the impact of the
question that she had.
I'm sorry.
It's an important clarifying question.
But then there was a comment that she was unsatisfied with. Moving on. Becky, do you have another clarifying question?
Okay, the clarifying question is, how can you be satisfied that the mercury is going to be filtered out in that system? Turbidity is one thing, you know, toxins are another. So
I think we're just going to say that we're confident that the material will stay within the work zone.
Thank you, Mr. Cotter. I just want to clarify again, the Department of Marine Resources has already commented on the impact to marine resources. This is about the impact of fishing activity. And I understand that people would like to interpret that broadly. The department interprets that fairly narrowly. We're talking about the impact to fishing activity in the area where the pipelines are laid, not from just from the actual activity of laying the pipelines and then the haul route.
So what you're saying is like fish habitat?
Correct. That is not within the scope of this hearing.
It is not in the scope of this hearing?
That is not within the scope of this hearing. The Department of Marine Resources comments on that. That is part of the DEP's evaluation. The Department of Marine Resources has already provided comments to DEP on these issues.
All right, here's a clarifying question. Did those comments include this dredging proposal?
So the comments that were provided to DEP by us, Maine DMR, did include the excavation, several different plans that we had, but the latest plans of the excavation for the pipe itself to be laid within. So yes, we did provide comments on the impacts to marine resources and marine fisheries along the specific lay of the pipe itself, both subtitle and intertidal.
You remember roughly when that was? Like when that was? I mean, was it, does it include the different configurations that the pipe seems to have squirmed through?
I've had numerous different configurations. We've had applications from the beginning of the summer till just recently. My comments that were provided were for the final plans that we have received.
Other clarifying questions? Ms. Tucker, I'm just going to see if anybody else has a question. This is Ms. McFadden, I believe, has been waiting for a while.
Thank you. This is just a quick one. Will they immediately be bringing those barges to Mack Point after being completely filled, or are they going to like sit and stand, so to speak? Is there like a time lag? Are you going to be hanging out with the barge? Are they going to sit overnight ever and possibly leak out? You know, that type of situation. I'm just wondering about the time period, because it does take a significant amount of time to be able to get that stuff up, and we got to be realistic about that.
So the intent of the work would be to transport a barge as soon as it's full, and that would be within one workday cycle.
So it could stay overnight then?
No, during the daylight hours.
Just
so it would be transported that day.
Sorry, this one.
Hi, my name's Ellie Daniels, and I'm in a butter to the property. And I've spent a good bit of time down on the intertidal zone there. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you know about the qualities of the benthic layer there. I understand it's considerably higher in silt type soils, and I'm wondering what accommodation is being made for that.
So if you're referring to the mud, the intertidal zone, the information we have, I believe, is that it's fairly cobbly. There is some finer material, but that's part of the reason for use of the timber mats.
Sorry, gentleman in the back, we'll come right back to you.
Can you
ask you to hold the mic
up?
Better.
The first question I'd like to ask you on your haul route, you have marked up the state here for your dredge. Well, let me mark, I am a fisherman in that area. In that area that I see drawn across, there's fish quite heavily. Now, well, let me mark this so that fishing gear will have to be moved and stay out of this like a roadway. Or, that's kind of, you can answer this, you'd like to answer that now. Will it be marked?
I was going to direct that back up to the folks at the table. I believe it would be marked so that you folks would be safe.
Next part of that question is a more little safe part of it. When it's storm, and this, will these won't be hot, they won't be full of these barges at night, correct? Will they haul 7 days a week?
It's possible.
It's possible when they're in that month's of period of work. And I'm in 110 to 130 barge round trip, correct?
Correct.
And if there's a storm, these will lay like a regular ship lays off from Searsport in those designated areas, correct?
Correct.
Now, do they use the method of laying on a cable? Is that one of Chimbrough's practices with their tugs and barge to drop the cable and use it as an anchor? Do you know or not know? Just curious questions that I've come across in years past with these barges, you said they had to be hoisted there, I assume they're like a scow that dry, and you said they mix them with the sediment with concrete, pump it off. Do they have the option of an open bottom barge where they can drop, take it out to sea and dump it? Do they have movable bottoms, I guess is what I'm asking.
Not the strict one.
And how many of these barges are there going to be? There'll be more than one making this trip, I assume. They'll be loading one while they're hauling one?
We have not finalized that right now. The 110 to 130 is one barge. So that would be one barge going back.
So it's possible that Chimbrough owns several barges. Could put on five or six barges to just cycle around like a choo-choo train.
It depends on what the plan is and how they're doing.
Okay. These are just questions that I need to know because me and several other fellow fishermen here tonight fish this area quite heavily.
Can I, just for a second, can I, for both the questions and the answer, could you both speak to the mic? Because this is being recorded for the department purposes, and we want to make sure that all the answers to questions are picked up for the record.
So I think for as far as the number of barges that we might have going right now, our plan is to have just one barge going back and forth. Offloading material is what the 110, 130 trips is referring to. If there would be more barges, that would obviously speed up the process. But again, we are limited by tide and the actual installation of the pipe. So we can only excavate so much material at a time. So the likelihood of there being five or six barges going back and forth is, I think, pretty slim.
Wait, sir, could I ask you to hold that until, if it's a comment, could I ask you to hold it till the comment period so we can make sure we get you on the record? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Tucker,
another question? Will the intake pipe be approximately 8 feet off the seafloor at its terminus?
I have to refer to my drawings, but I believe that
this isn't your drawing, so
I can't do it. You have the only microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Yes, the bar. The...
Not you.
I know what you think. I want to know what she thinks.
Yeah, it's 8 feet to the top of the page.
And is, I'm sorry.
Is this the current route for the pipelines that you are proposing? Or is that the November 2018 one?
That's a graphical representation that was shown, and I would refer to the engineering drawings that everybody has. They were submitted.
But to clarify, yes, these are the drawings for the 2018 route, not the current route. Is that correct?
It's a very small-scale plan that I can't tell you which route that is. I'm telling you, you should refer to the engineering drawings that are much more exact and that were submitted with the DEP.
I just want for the record to note that the DMR's document uses the 2018 route that was abandoned in November of 2018.
Are there any other clarifying questions, Dave?
My name is David Black. I'm a lobster fisherman in the bay here. And I want to know a little bit about the process. You did talk about the process. I'd like to know where this information that you're taking tonight is going from here, first of all. And is there I think somebody asked this already, but is there a public comment period? Because I had a lot of guys that I talked to that wanted to be here, but it was very short notice, and now we're learning that the purpose of this hearing is a little bit different than what was proposed, and I know people that would like to make comments, and I'd like to have them have that opportunity. So anyway, what is the process from tonight?
Good question. So I think
I think the point that was raised is fair. I do anticipate that at the end of this hearing, we will be extending a comment period. I need to think about that for a few minutes, but we will make an announcement at the end of the hearing and accept written comments further after this. We have also accepted written comments up to this hearing. I just note that, and people who've asked us about whether or not they could submit a written comment have been able to do so. Any comments that come in tonight will be used to inform our submission to DEP. Does that answer your question, David?
I'm just wondering, muscle harvesting happens all year long. I know we're planning on doing this in the winter, right? So are you, as a DMR, planning on shutting our aquaculture site down to muscle harvesting during this time, or any other fisheries in the immediate area?
See, no need to shut any fisheries down during the construction or the operation of the facility.
Is that something that you can give to us, like in some kind of writing for our aquaculture site? Because that would be a lot of losses and revenues and whatnot, and who would compensate for those losses if our site was shut down and if we're the only people that are out there doing something?
I think our comment could indicate our intent not to make any changes during the construction site as a result of this construction. I can't predict what other things might happen that would impact a grower or a particular fishery, and so I just want to be careful about the balance of what we'd be saying.
The plan is no.
Anybody else? Come back to you, ma'am. Sir.
John Kruger, this is a clarifying question. At the DEP hearing, there was a submittal by Dr. Russell from DMR regarding a virus upload, and Upstream was told we were going to be able to respond to that, and this may not be the opportunity tonight, but I'm wondering, when is that opportunity? We've hired people from Newfoundland to provide data, and we've got written testimony. It was my understanding it would be tonight, but when will we be able to provide that response to Dr. Russell's testimony?
I'm sorry, I didn't introduce Mark Randlett, who's our Assistant Attorney General, and Dennis Nault, who's our Environmental Permit Coordinator.
Hi, I'll introduce myself right off the bat. My name is Mark Randlett. I'm Assistant Attorney General. I'm just here advising the department tonight for the purpose of this hearing. With respect to that question, it's my understanding that that is a DEP issue, that the DEP record has been closed. So this is definitely not the forum in which to have that issue addressed. It would be up to DEP whether or not they wanted to reopen or extend their comment period to accept that kind of information. But it's not something we control.
Okay. I got other things to do tonight. But it was our understanding that we were given an opportunity at the hearing, and we said we would not do it at the hearing because we had just read Dr. Russell's report and really had much of an opportunity. So if it's closed, you guys can open that, since we are understanding that this is something we would work with you on.
Am I misunderstanding the purpose of this talking about?
Is this related to the minister?
Okay. So let me just go back. So what the DMR is addressing tonight are impacts on the fishing community with regard to the actual dredging operations, the construction work that's being done at the site, and the haul disposal route. The issue that you're raising are matters relating to the DEP discharge permit or types of impacts that might result as from something different from what we're discussing tonight. So this would not be the appropriate place to have those issues raised. That would be a DEP issue, and it would be up to the DEP whether or not they allow that into the record at this point.
There's a gentleman over, a woman right behind you, Ms. McCracken. Yeah, hi, I'm Pam McCracken. I think I understood you say that the comments would inform a report that you will make to the DEP. My question is that a public report that you will be making to the DEP, and how would we access that report?
Yes, that will be public, and that will be submitted to the Department of Environmental Protection, and I assume would be added to their website where they have everything related to the Nordic permit process.
This is a non-fishing person question. Is the disturbance of sediment something that could affect their mussel farm? Is there, you know, is that something that causes a pollution to the health and viability of being able, any of the aqua and shellfish and so on during this process? Is that a threat, and has that been considered and addressed?
So yes, when we provided our comments to DEP on this project overall, we did look at all those specific related issues, and based on scientific studies, other similar related types of projects with other aquaculture facilities. I am a shellfish biologist by training. Those are things that we did look at. We are not generally concerned because of the distance away and occurrence within those areas with the debris currents in place.
I'm hoping this will be the last question. We can move into the public. Oh, maybe we'll
so
take
one. I have a question. If there's a pipe that's, would you say it's 8 feet up off the sea bottom, how far out is that? How far out does that go? So is where however long that is, will that area where that pipe is be forever closed to fishing? And will it have buoys on it so that sailors and fishermen and other boaters don't drop an anchor or bump into it?
The mere existence of a pipeline does not necessarily require a closure. As people may be aware, there are cables all over Penobscot Bay and throughout coastal waters that are not closed areas. It is possible that there would be marking requirements. I believe that would be through the Corps permit. Certainly, if there are concerns about activities related to fishing, for marking that for purposes of drag activity or setting traps in that area, those are the types of comments that we would like to hear tonight. And we would include those in our comments to DEP, but I think they'll also be considered through the Army Corps permit process.
At the end of the pipe, there is approximately 35 feet of low water, so you're still looking at 25 or more feet of water depth above the structure. So navigation, we do not feel is a concern, but we have made recommendations to the Corps that they do consider marking requirements so that we can fulfill those, but we do need their direction to do that.
Okay, I'm gonna take two questions, and then we're going to move on into the public comment because it's 6:45 and people don't want to be here all night.
So I've been following the math of the amount of dredging, and this relates directly to the number of trips and the day trips. So one trip a day, 7 days a week, no storms is 3 months. And I've done the numbers a couple times here, and it looks like one day's excavation is going to result in approximately somewhere around 20 feet of ditch being opened up, which means that the excavation is going to be opened for the 1,000-foot lengths of the pipeline that are going to be sunk in it for 30, 40, 50 days. Could you just talk about how these daily trips fit into the actual laying of the pipes and weather-related concerns? Because we often have some pretty bad weather in this neighborhood, big waves, storms.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, our construction plan, we would only be opening up sections each day, so we would only open up what we can manage, and that would be dependent upon weather as well. So if you're looking at trips per day, 2, maybe 3, depending on weather. So weather would be a definite factor in our plan.
But how about, so you open up 2 days worth is 40 feet or 3 days is 60 feet or 70 or 80 feet. Is that pipeline going to be laid then?
Yes. So that pipeline would be opened up and the sections depend on the tide cycle. So where we are in that pipeline route, which is roughly 6,000 feet all told. So it's going to vary depending on the water depth and the tide cycle. So it could be 10 feet. We have short window in the short tide window in the intertidal zone, or it might be 40 feet as we get deeper, and how much the barge can actually handle.
I think the point to clarify is that at the end of the tide cycle, it's covered back over, so the sections have to be short enough that each time you get to the end of that tide cycle, you've recovered the pipe. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Last question. I'm going to move on.
Nope. Okay, just a quick question. With respect to the maintenance of the pipeline, right? Because there's going to be some areas that are still above on top of the ground, but anchored. So you're going to have to do some sort of dredging to support the anchors, right? And then also, over time, some of that stuff will have to be adjusted and redone. How does that fit into the effect on things down the road after this process, maintaining the pipeline, especially the exposed part?
The anchors are to be installed, either helical anchors or driven piles, without need for excavation in the area of the anchors. We've also looked at the material of the currents. We do not expect significant scour or accretion around the structure because the currents at that depth are not strong. If the pipe does have areas of accretion or scour, it would not affect the operation of the pipe. But we will be annually inspecting the pipeline, so if there is an area of concern, then we could then address that, but we do not expect that.
Just one last question on the pipeline.
So I'm just a little confused about what the current method is to cover the pipes, and none of that will, there's nothing going to cover the pipes now, that anyone, there's no, just the anchors. So there's nothing that you're going to have to go and maintain. Go ahead.
Just as a clarification, there's the anchors and there's concrete collars every so often to, you know, basically keep the buoyancy from wanting the pipe to rise. By both anchoring and concrete collars, you're basically holding that pipe to the bottom surface. So I just was clarifying that you were saying there's nothing on top, but actually there are, in fact, in places, concrete collars as well.
I thought there was a blanket over here.
No, that's not been in the design for quite some time.
It's just
collars. And
I'm just confused because I've seen multiple versions and I'm trying to figure out what's current. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break and we will reconvene for public comment at that point. Okay, we're going to get started again. I just want to address the question of extending the comment period based on the changes that we've been discussing tonight, including the hall route, and we are going to extend a public comment period for 10 days following this hearing. I didn't count out the days, but I will do that while people are providing comments and give you the closure date of that. We'll also advertise that on DMR's homepage, which is main.gov/DMR. March 12th. Thank you, Mark. March 12th. We'll close the public comment period at 5 o'clock on March 12th. Who would like to start the public comments?
Last one. Get Paul on here first.
I'm gonna go. That's true. I did. I'm sorry. I had Paul and Harmony McFadden signed in first, so I will do those first.
March 12th, 5 o'clock.
Is Paul here? He's not here.
He's
there now. Paul, would you like to provide the first comment? And again, and I'd ask that everybody please try to stay within 3 minutes. If you do go much further than that, I am going to ask you to wrap it up, please, as expeditiously as possible. And please try to keep your comments within the scope of the hearing, which again is impacts of the fishing industry from activities at the point of the activity and then also along culverts.
Documents.
These are three charts that were based upon the information that I had up until this hearing, where I was shown some new information and listened to a narrative that was fairly confusing to me. But I'm just going to go right into this. My name is Paul Bernacki, and I'm a consultant that works with property owners around this area where the dredging is going to go on. I am a DEP certified erosion and sedimentation control contractor. I have 10 private intertidal shoreland owners, and I'm an agent for those, and I've done quite a bit of permitting and construction work actually in these sediments. And when I say I've done that, I mean I've been on the machine, on a backhoe, on these sediments, and actually know what the sediments and the subsoils and Presumpscot clay actually look like and do. I know for a fact, because of the charts that I've studied supplied by the applicant, which were done by their vendor, Norman Dew, that there has been no sediment testings of the intertidal zone. There's been no geotechnical, there's been no quantifying of what kinds of sediments, how many fines or how many courses, and there's also been no drilling to determine how much rock is there. However, the applicant in their construction narratives state that if they should run into bedrock, then they'll stop what they're doing and start blasting or using a large backhoe to pop it up. So, you know, I'm impromptu here for a minute because I wasn't presented with any new information that there had been new sediment testings since the ones that have been presented and the charts and the actual sites that were shown on the map, which I've presented here, that were not tested because the water was too shallow. I just want to point out that 12 square miles of the bay has been closed by this agency to the taking of lobsters in a line from Stockton across to Castine. The reason it's been closed is because there's the lobsters are poisoned with mercury. That's about another half mile further away than the dredge site landings for the barges. So this project and dredging and construction plans has a 2-year history of change locations, haphazard construction narrative consistency, and a continued very confusing. It's been very confusing trying to keep up with it.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, please.
I am going to wrap up, and then I'll give you the paper. So the amounts that I've seen and the actual construction plan, the acreage of dredging, excavation, side casting, re-dredging, and filling amounts to about 6 acres. And the funny thing is that the Natural Resources Protection Act requires of the applicant plans of the actual area. And this plan is supposed to be at a scale of 1 inch equals 100 feet that shows 2-foot contours, and all components of the project impacting wetlands or other protected natural resources must be included. So that plan is not here tonight. I have not seen that plan. Our engineer, using the applicant's data are on the wall back there for anybody to look at.
Mr. Bernacki, I have to ask you to stop, please. Please make one final comment if you want, but we're well over time.
I'll make one final comment. The Jaeger Chapter 5 testing reports and all geological sediment reports indicate that there really, really should be real sampling and analysis plans put in place for this project for this agency and all the agencies to properly review the impact to the fisheries. Thank you.
Next.
Ms. McFadden, if you'd like to come up, and if I could ask people to please sit at the table just so we can hear your comment directly. And if I could also ask speakers after they speak to sign their name to this sheet.
So my name is Arminie McFadden, and my boyfriend Joseph Larrabee and I own the aquaculture site just downwind to where you guys want to put this stuff out. And my reservations are kind of wishy-washy at this point. I've been totally opposed thus far, but I'm not totally opposed. I've rethought things, and I think I've come up with maybe a possible solution. So while Nordic Aqua Farms has presented what seems to be a great plan, it lacks a great plan for the effluent discharge. And I want to be clear that dumping is discharging is dumping. However you want to look at it, it's the same. They really haven't taken into too much consideration the adjacent landowners. And we're all directly affected by the ecosystems that surround us, specifically in the mid-coast of Maine. The marine ecosystem of Penobscot Bay is responsible for sustaining the life of numerous aqueous species. And it's home to lobsters, of course, crabs, flounder, scallops, seals, and many other types of fishes, clams, mussels, eels, porpoises, urchins, shrimp, seabirds, and many other. Each of them living here depends on the suitability of the marine environment in the bay. Therefore, they depend on us as the Penobscot Bay Area residents to speak for them and protect them from harm because they can't speak for themselves. And these waters have also been a way of life for many generations of people, and it supports a diverse collection of businesses that are really, truly, directly and indirectly affected. Whether the focus is on one species or another, it boils down to the ecosystem's importance to itself as a whole and to us being the people that live here in the Penobscot Bay Area. And the case can be easily made that, you know, the Penobscot Bay virtually is the center of the coast of Maine, making it the epicenter for lobsters and tourism. Not to mention, when you're shown a picture of Maine, it's what your eye usually focuses on. You look basically almost exactly, you know, the guy on Channel 5 puts the picture up at night. Everybody basically looks right where we're looking to do this. So, you know, it's basically indispensable to the economy of Maine. You know, you taint the water, you taint the economy. So I want to take a step back, and so we all know why it matters. It affects all of us. I'm certainly one of those people. At least, and Joe, at least a 6-acre aquaculture site located in Northport, which is a point of contention before when we originally got the site. So I want to know why, first of all, nobody's been contacting us about any of these proceedings or anything whatsoever. I was just kind of taken aback. You know, I know we all do the daily grind and try to keep up, but I would like to be contacted in the future, please, if possible. And it's basically, our site is 3 kilometers directly downstream from the dumping site. I know it's not right directly there, so that does give me comfort. Right now, there's 6 rafts bearing mussels that are at varying stages of growth, and Penn Bay hasn't been operational since June of 2004, and has yielded some of the finest mussels from Maine in the Maine waters compared to the other 3 sites that Joe's used over the course of the last 15 years prior to this. And the importance of all the mussels in the bay equate like this. The mussels are filter feeders, obviously. I know you guys know this, but not everybody does. They're considered to be ecosystem engineers. And one of our rafts filters on average 1 million gallons of water per hour. So that's 6 million gallons per hour. I know. And this is where my difference of opinion is, okay? I don't want the 36-inch pipe directly, you know, discharging it. But I guess, you know, if we have to do it, I would hope that they would use the idea of best practices to be able to discharge this. I know they have a big super treatment plan in place and idea, I've looked at and researched some other places that use a commercial distillation process, and it's really the only safe way that I have been. I've done a lot of research over this over the last couple of years. I know we've talked before. It's really the only safe way to safely remove all the nitrate, and I really think this is the way to go. The plan, you know, proposes to build a water treatment facility, so why not build a distillation plant within that facility? And that way, okay, I know I'm trying to wrap it up. I'm making it fast.
You can give me your paper or comments, too, if you're willing, or send them later.
I understand. So basically, that would solidify, it would cost a lot more money, but it would calm most of the community concerns here, and it would benefit the company over time by solidifying the relationship with all of Penobscot Bay, basically, and show the dedication to the protection of this environment. And anything short of that, I think, would have dire consequences. So my basic questions, are you willing to try and look at possibly doing this or asking them, you know, to look into this? And I feel like more baseline testing should be done. We've only got 1 year in these six sites, you know, six spots that you did it. So I'm kind of feeling like maybe another year of baseline is kind of necessary to establish some really good data. And I'm also wondering, are these numbers allowed to change? Because I keep coming, you know, like you guys, we all are coming to these meetings and hearings. You're doing your job. We're trying to do ours. But these numbers keep changing a lot. And I understand that there's a process that you know, in doing everything, you have to figure it out. But I think everybody's a little frustrated with the fact that the size of the pipes keep changing, where the pipes are going keep changing. And so also, what type of place do you have in plan in place do you have for shutting down if there's a problem with the water quality, like immediate shutdown or not? And then also, will you require bonding, and how much for Nordic Aquaculture Farms? Because I'm required to be bonded as an aquaculture site in the water just short of there. So are they going to be required to be bonded as well?
Next question. Thank you.
Good job.
I'm also happy to take any written comments that people have this evening if they want to submit them.
Good evening. My name is Wayne Canning. I'm a zone representative with the state for the fishermen up in the northern part of this bay. Zone D, District 11. So I'm not just representing myself, I'm speaking for probably 40 fishermen. Not all of them fish over on this side, but half of them do at least, maybe 25. So the concerns that I've had talking with the guys is, and we went to the Nordic, the BEP and the DEP hearing here a couple weeks ago, and there was a guy there, Pettigrew from the University of Maine. He teaches at the university. He's a professor. And he recommended that testing be done out here in various locations to tell the salinity, the nitrates, and the tides, the currents, and what happens during the storms as far as the water flow and how things are mixing in. And I think most of us think that's a necessary thing to happen. And maybe I'm not supposed to be saying that tonight here with you folks, but it's already said, I guess. So, and thank you. So back to the haul route. You say you're going to start in November. Well, I fished this year, and I only came in because my engine was acting up more than I'd like it to, but I didn't give it up till about the middle of December, and I'm fishing right past that haul route, right up into the bay, and not just a few traps. And I'm not the only one. There's a guy here that fishes crabs, Lucky Schedule, and TJ works with him in the wintertime. They're fishing there all winter. And the crab fishing up in here in the wintertime is the best it's ever been because some of the lobsters have taken off and the crabs move in. So, and also, the pipe, or pipes, originally, they were on... They were buried, or partially buried, at least 50%. We thought that was a pretty good deal, you know. You can't get hung up on that. Now they're going to have them up off the bottom. Good chance we're fishing by there, we're going to be hung up. And I don't know what happens after you get hung up, or the rope parts, or the pipe comes down. I don't know what will take place at that point. But it shouldn't be allowed to happen. I think the pipes ought to be set back down in the ground so they're covered up. Half, three quarters covered. You know, so if you're hauling a trap, it's a rounded pipe, it would slide up over it. If you're 8-9 feet off the bottom, you're going to get off ashore if you're anywhere near the area. So also, the discharge of the pipe, we're quite concerned about that, afraid of the change in the ecosystem. You know, lobsters are pretty sensitive to change. Crabs maybe not so much, but there's other fish. I got a picture on a calendar the grandson took. Probably it's about 500 feet from where that discharge pipe's going to be. It's a mother with two baby porpoises feeding on shrimp. That's what's taking place up there in the fall and the wintertime. There's shrimp up in here, which I guess we don't have a shrimp season anymore because there aren't any. But the porpoise seemed to think there was. And so back in the mussel farm down south of there, which isn't far from that pipe, that's a real concern. I mean, if the water coming out of the pipe is real, real good, maybe nothing will take place. But boy, if something goes wrong, there's going to be a lot of people affected. Not just in the water fishermen, but the people on land that we distribute our products to that make a paycheck from it. And also the young people. I'm at the age where probably I've just about done it already, you know. I'm come to the finish line. But all the young kids behind me, they want to do what I did. Not everybody, but there's quite a few that have gotten a student apprentice, they got a student license, and they're going for it. And I hope that we're real cautious and we don't make a mistake and go ahead with this, and then it goes sour and it gets shut down up there. We've already got a shutdown northeast of where this location is, probably about 4 to 5 miles away.
Can I ask you about
that? Okay, well, I'm just about there, Meredith. The haul route, the time, November through April. November, like I said, I'm fishing up here until mid-December. So we are fishing there, and like I said, the crabbers are fishing there all winter. And I guess if they mark it out, you know, so everybody knows where we're going, and it'd be nice if they haul during the day, so they know where they're going to. Well, there's no sense that gear, and they go outside their markings and run over the gear. And the pipe being on board, I guess, oh yeah, the sediment that comes out of the construction site, it doesn't get contained by booms or whatever they're using in filters. Because during that year, you also got elvers that are going up to the Passy, and they're going over to Goose River. So I don't know if they travel the shoreline. I don't know the migration route of elver eels. I don't know if the sediment that gets outside the boom or whatever is going to affect any of that or not. And I'm hoping that maybe the research or the testing that maybe the state can convince Pettigrew to do, you know, to have done, which I think he's a real qualified guy to do that type of work. And I'd like to see it happen. Thank you for your time. And I'll be sending in a lot.
Thank you. Anybody else who would like to provide comment?
Good evening. I'm Sid Block, and I live in Northport. Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
I'm Sid Block, and I live in Northport, and I get the gist of these this hearing tonight, so I'm going to cut right to the chase first, and then I'll give you some comments. My wife's family hails from the Calais area. We've lived in the mid-coast of Maine since 1976, currently in Northport on the south shore of the Lower Little River Reservoir. Martha is the owner of this property and thus a legal abutter to the Belfast Water District and the proposed Nordic Aqua Farms facility. I'm speaking for her, and Martha requests that you, the DMR, hold a formal adjudicatory hearing. I'm glad you're here. Second, tonight I speak for the Friends of the Harry Dell Hartley Conservation Area, the holder of the conservation easement imposed by the owners Jeffrey Mabee and Judith Grace. the terms of which require their registered intertidal zone at the mouth of the Little River be maintained in its natural condition. The dredging, trenching, and or blasting planned by Nordic in this fragile, ecologically, environmentally, and economically important intertidal land are strictly prohibited. As president of the board of the Friends of the Harriet L. Hartley Conservation Area, I also request that you hold a formal adjudicatory hearing. Now for some personal comments. The gist of all of this is that it seems to me that that you are more than accepting of Nordic and Nordic's hired consultants in giving you their analysis of what they're going to do, and that there has been no independent scientific analysis. And you're accepting this simply because Nordic has told you they've looked into this themselves and decided the dredging and the discharge will do no harm. And I say, come on now. Suppose someone came to you for a permit to put a great white shark in Belfast Bay. Would you accept their assurance? That's no shark. That's a goldfish with a glandular condition. Now, let me tell you, there are a lot of concerns about what's happening here. And I do think that if you had independent testing, and that you should make Nordic wait until such adequate independent studies of the seabed and the currents of the bay have been performed, such testing would afford you a far better way to predict the potential marine consequences of Nordic's plan. You know, there's a lot of warm water that's going to be discharged, and warm water is a potential pollutant, according to the Federal Clean Water Act. I'm not aware of any study about Nordic's potential to cause algae blooms and other adverse effects on the biota, and that includes human and fish of the bay and its beaches and its community. I can't find where you've taken into account the findings of the state of Maine, which have identified and mapped this area as rare and important habitat, or those of the federal government that identified it as an essential fish habitat for up to 9 species, including winter flounder. So, you know, the DEP, the EPA, and the DMR seem to have very short memories. 50 years ago, without adequate studies, the state allowed a private corporation to dump tons of mercury into the Penobscot River. It took lawsuits by the public to finally bring the responsible polluter to task. But no amount of money will ever undo the damage done. And one would think that the state and its regulatory agencies would want to be more careful this time around. I think the time has come for you to rise to the occasion, to stand up for the DMR's mission for the public good. And I will finish with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you please sign?
I did sign.
Great. Thank
that,
you.
Did that first.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And here's.
David, thank you very much, sir. Mm-hmm.
So, good evening, Ms. Mendelson, and Mr. Assistant Attorney General, and Mr. Martin Hall. My name is David Black. I'm a lobster fisherman in Penobscot Bay, up on Penobscot Bay. And I'm going to make your job really simple tonight, and I'm not going to say a whole lot, because I have already submitted written testimony to the DEP, and I would like to be on the record with that information, and I would like to have you find that testimony and review it. And if you really want to know how I feel, it's really much, pretty much written up in that. I reviewed a letter from the Department of Marine Resources. It was signed by actually Dennis Martinall. Mr. Martinall is sitting up here this evening. And in the last sentence, or actually the last two sentences of his letter, it says, further, meaning in addition, DMR requests suitable sediment testing along the proposed pipes for potential contaminants. The collection and sampling should meet the Army Corps of Engineers standards for testing on marine sediments. And as a result of the dredging and the haul route, there'll be some disruption to the sediments in this area. And one thing I'd like to say is, if nobody's familiar with Bigelow and Schroeder, there is a book for the fishes of the Gulf of Maine. There are 252 species of fish in the Gulf of Maine, and I can assure anybody that a lot of those species live in Penobscot Bay. It is an estuary. I have seen firsthand the life that is in this bay out here. And I think to disturb the bottom sediments in this area for the Nautic Aquafarms project would cause a few contamination problems. And based on that, I would ask you, as the Department of Marine Resources, to please recommend to the Board of Environmental Protection that a complete environmental assessment be completed for Upper Penobscot Bay before any permits or any projects here are issued. And that is all I have to say. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Good evening. My name is T.J. Falkenham. I'm a lobster fisherman out of Belfast. I'm going to make it short because Wayne Cannon and David have touched on some very good points that you have on record already, so I'm not going to go over that again. Two or three points I want to bring to your attention, and I do want on the record, in practices that have happened in the past that I've seen and had to deal with a lot last year. I asked earlier about if this haul route would be well marked. I've also learned that this out to 35 feet to 70 feet is going to come up out of the ocean. I was under the assumption it was all covered, but the last out to 70 foot of water is not going to be. It's going to be 5-8 feet above the ocean, which GEO could get wound up into. That's why I like to have the pipeline, if it's built like that, to be well designated and well marked, so we're not losing gear in it. The next practice that a lot of people don't know is happening, and I had originally asked the lady from Chimbro, which she's not a tugboat operator, but I'm sure she's well aware of what happens within the practices of the company. They take these barges when they're not in use, and they what they call is laying on the cable. They drop the cable, 1,000 feet of it, between the barge and the tug. And what it does over the evening is it rakes the bottom of the ocean, traps and everything get towed up, snarled up. Prime pristine lobster bottom gets rolled and scuffed and stove up, and it just lays in swings all night long. 1,000 feet of that going right around in a circle because the barge is still hooked to the tug, but the weight of the cable holds the barge and stuff there until a storm comes, and then they have to shorten up and move to another area. And I also asked the lady if they would be in designated areas. If we get a really bad storm and they have to, in years past, they've had practice where I think they would, because if they were over by a little river, they're going to want to hide under the lee of the land of Bayside. And that's a lot of fishing gear down through there. And as the fishermen, including myself, are going to take really high tolls. It's not, you know, it's going to impact more than, and you're down below that, you've got a mussel famine. Sediments, and if this filter fabric in those barges, it gets rough, stuff is sloshed over, sediment can be spread over a 5-6 mile route. A lot of silt can be pushed one way or the other. With a southerly blow, all the sediments are going to wash into Belfast Harbor, and the pickup lines from Young's Lobster Pound and lobsters that we have in holding cars and lobster cars in the harbor are affected by it. It just like sucking in gray, muddy water. And I think with the temperature rising, that all of that's going to go into the ecosystem, and it's going to affect a lot. It's going to be a lot more harm done than good. And I just want you to realize there's a big impact that there can be a time.
Could you make sure I sign this from the sheet?
I think I already did.
Oh, you did? Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Can I ask you to sign there? I'm sorry. I want to make sure I have the right order.
Yep.
Speakers. I'm going to go to one more gentleman in the back, and then I'll come back to Mr. Huber and then to you folks. I'm sorry. Okay.
I just ask you to review my written statements from the DEP, because I actually did submit these for the DEP on February 11th. There's two.
I'm not going to review the DEP record, but I will. You handed me. Can you submit your comments to us?
Yeah, can I give it to you after?
You have 10 days. You have 10 days, yep. And Mr. Black, if you could do the same and resubmit to DMR if you'd like us to review. If you would like us to review the comments that you submitted to BEP, if you could please resubmit them to us in the next 10 days, please.
I'd be very happy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Huber.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll make sure to sign that.
Yes, hi, my name is Ron Huber. I'm Executive Director of Friends of Penobscot Bay. We're a citizen association dedicated to advocacy and education on behalf of our biggest bay in the state, affiliate of the Waterkeeper Alliance. And we're asking that the DMR's review of this project looks at the evaluation of the potential for significantly degrading habitats that are important for people that are intertidally fish, that is, they're intertidal seaweed harvesters, intertidal worm diggers, clammers. There are even people that use beach seines and you know, go out at mid-tide and do all that. And as far as I understand it, the coastal program of DMR got tasked with ensuring state actions are consistent with the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act and the relevant standards. Now, a couple years ago, NOAA designated portions of the intertidal area all the way around our whole coast there as habitat areas of particular concern. And this was a particular concern because these are choke point areas for a lot of fishes. A very simple one is, you know, a juvenile cod. Juvenile cod's not going to make it into much older unless it has places to hide. And one place to hide is in the shallows at low tide. At high tide, coming up into the intertidal. If you're small, you can hide behind a piece of gravel. If you're a larger predator fish, then by golly, a bird's going to get you. So it's a safe place for them. So the challenge that I'm seeing here is that for people that fish, and also the fish that they fish for, these siltation plumes from the excavation of the intertidal lands that will be fouling this very important habitat, that is the cobble areas and gravel areas that these fishes need. Once they're settled up, can't hide behind them. So the other point is, though, for the people that are rockweed harvesters, other seaweeds, other intertidal harvesters, if this end pipe of the effluent pipe does indeed have a heavy nitrogen emission of the waters, it could very well stimulate this green slime algae. May have seen it here and there, and that entirely raises havoc with things like worms and clams and seaweeds and eelgrass and the minnows and so on. So I'd really like to make sure that you pay close attention to what the impacts of this could have, both in this development and operationally, on those fisheries. That is, even though they're a lesser fishery, the intertidal ones, perhaps, than lobster and so on, they are still enormously significant. Thank you.
Can you please ask audience members not to speak while...
Folks, if you have other conversations to have, could I ask you just to step out into the hall so that we aren't interrupting the audio and people can hear? And if anybody has a sidebar conversation, I'd ask you just to step out into the hallway. It's interfering a little bit with our audio and people's ability here. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ellie Daniels, and I own and run the property to the proposed project. A couple weeks ago, a number of people in this room spent 40 hours plus listening. I listened as an intervener to testimony presented at the BEP hearings, and I found it I learned a lot. There was a lot of really thorough and respectful testimony that got offered. However, at the end of the week, I came away with one strong impression, and that was that Nordic Aqua Farms had done a lot of modeling of most, not all, of the possible scenarios and outcomes of its proposed activities, but that for a company that is planning a $500 million project, it has spent only 4.5 days doing actual field study in the wetlands area of the project, including the intertidal area. And none of that field study actually happened out on the water to determine the movement of the currents or the complex differences of the current movement at different depths. Wind was not factored into it. The temperature difference between the plume at the outflow of the pipe and the receiving water was not accounted for accurately. In fact, a background temperature of the bay was taken from a study done in 1978, which we know that our waters in the coast of Maine, Gulf of Maine, are warming quickly, faster than anywhere. We know, in fact, Nordic, as I learned, used a two-dimensional model that was actually designed for studying a Mississippi River diversion project to theorize the dispersion of the discharge water without actually modeling its behavior in the stratification of the plume or with any background field data about the current movements of the waters in the bay. So as you're aware, 7.7 million gallons of brackish water is potentially going to go out into the bay at a depth of 20 to 30 feet. And the average temperature at that depth is between 36 and 54 degrees. And on the surface, it's between 32 and 72 degrees. These are all Fahrenheit, depending on the time of the year. So when I look at that, it seems that we could expect up to a 27 degree difference in temperature between the effluent and the receiving water in winter at the point of outflow from the pipe. So my deep concern and that of scientists that testified for the BMP is that neither the thermal nor the chemical characteristics of the discharge are being considered as having a potential permanent impact on the fisheries in particular. Nordic's own expert, Nathan Dill, had honest comments to make at the hearing, which I wrote down. I wrote down because I was quite amazed. In response to an in-depth question about his modeling from the BEP, he said, well, that's the nature of modeling. It's all imaginary. Yeah. He was asked, how long does a simulation take? How long did you run your model? He answered, I ran the model for 14 days. Results that were taken after that period. You wouldn't expect to see what the long-term effects of the discharge might be unless you look at results after weeks or months. Later, he responded to a question from an intervener, and he said, quote, models aren't helpful without field verification. More data is always helpful. Questions went on. Did you look at the changes at different depths? No, he was using a two-dimensional. So there's so much we don't know about the effects of this project. What are the actual pre-existing conditions in the bay? What are the actual characteristics of the plume? Where will the plume go and how will it disperse? What factors, such as feeding, will change the qualities of the plume? Will effluent nutrients have stable concentrations? What might be the effects on the benthic layer? Is there a risk of algal blooms in the outflow area? Is there a possibility of a decrease of biodiversity in the outflow zone? Might there be a resulting dead zone? Will plankton suffer from thermal stress or demise in the plume area? And what will be the effect on surrounding water and species? And are the possible problems mitigatable? If you change the flora, you inevitably change the fauna. I urge the DMR to look more carefully at the issues presented here. My comments only represent one area of concern among many, and I add to that list the concern that DMR didn't appear to be planning to hold a hearing at all until it was reminded that it was required by statute to do so. Thank you.
I do just want to clarify the record about the requirement for a hearing. There is no requirement to hold a hearing. We determined to hold a hearing based on the allegation of procedural error in order to ensure that there was a complete record. However, we do not have a requirement to hold a hearing. There is a requirement if we are requested and there is a dredge project to hold hearing if we are requested to by five or more people. We did not believe this originally to be a dredge project, which is why we did not notice it as a dredge project with an intention not to hold a hearing. Typically, the department does hold hearings for all dredge projects. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Good evening, thank you. My name's Connie Hatch. I live in. Good evening, thank you. My name is Connie Hatch and I live in Belfast. I'm an avid swimmer and often in the summer test out different areas on Belfast Bay where I can snorkel. Yes, the waters tend to be murky, depending on the tide, but no matter, as I swim along, I see so much beautiful aquatic life that it never fails to astound me. The Nordic Aquafarm's proposed fish factory for Belfast puts at huge risk the entire ecosystem of Penobscot Bay. It is unthinkable that such a mega industrial plan would be able to acquire permits from those state agencies whose mission it is to protect our waters, land and air from ever more polluting and extractive projects. For over 2 years now, I have been watching closely the process of Nordic Aquafarms submitting plans and details of their fish factory. The more I've learned about this corporation and their project, the more I am disturbed by the magnitude of the carbon footprint and the more than likely scenario of Belfast Bay, Penobscot Bay, and all the marine life that depend on clean, uncontaminated waters being harmed. I ask you, as part of the team of state agencies that can refuse to lend our land and our bay to a corporate experiment based on potential monetary gain, please do not give Nordic Aquafarms the right to despoil our beautiful bay. Thank you.
Hey, my name is Joanne Mosswild and I live in Belfast. I enjoy the bay on the boat and swimming and rowing, etc. And I appreciate the streamlined approach that you have for this hearing tonight. However, when you look only at one aspect of a project, it is easy to miss the big picture. You can't really talk about just laying this pipe and its impact on fishing in isolation. You have to look at the whole ecosystem and with the long view. You say impacts to fishing only? Well, fish and fishing continue to flourish because of a balanced ecosystem, which is what we have. And it's been stressed and it's improving, but it's more balanced than it has been. Please take a look at the big picture, the whole ecosystem that supports fish and fishing in Penobscot Bay, and look at this deeply before you allow this activity that will have long-term and, I believe, negative effects on the bay. It won't be a short-term effect. You won't say, well, we've laid the pipe and now you can't see it. I think there will be things that we can't see that will be negative. It's our resource, it's our bay. And also I'd like to urge you to please listen to the fishermen. They have generations of deep local knowledge which could surpass scientific studies. Please listen to them and respect their views. I also wonder how much coordination there is and conversation among the various agencies that are looking at this project. Once again, trying to look at the big picture instead of just your little section. You know, are you talking to the Army Corps? Are you talking to the BEP? Are you all having conversations about how this will affect the whole bay with every aspect that they have to, that this company has to get permits for? And one more question. I just wonder, is there any eelgrass in this area where you're proposing to put this pipe? Is there eelgrass there? Is it a place where eelgrass could grow? Because we all know that this is valuable to our ecosystem. And it's, you know, it's been disappearing, and how can we encourage more eelgrass? Thank you.
How many more people do we have after Ms. Tucker? A number. Okay. Thank you.
Because I, by past experience in the legislature, I'll remember that I always forget to sign here. So, my name is Kim Irvin Tucker. I'm the attorney for the Maine Lobstering Union. Several of the lobstermen here in this room, Jeffrey Mabee and Judith Grace, who are the owners of the intertidal land that Nordic is attempting to put its pipelines over their objections, and representative of the holder of the conservation easement on that intertidal area, the Friends of the Harriet L. Hartley Conservation Area.
Yep, have a good evening.
I have electronically filed testimony, but I do want to touch on some of that here, and then I will pass in the hard copy of it. My concern is, when I've spoken with other entities, that this project has been a moving target. It is hide the ball and move the goalpost, I have said, and tonight is another example of that, and I do not put this on you as the state. I put this on the applicant. For the first time, we are hearing that there's going to be this haul route with 110 to 130 haul trips that are going to drag barges in an area where there is buried mercury. So an additional area that we have to look at of where the federal court's experts have said is buried mercury from the Ultra County discharge. Pretending this mercury does not exist is not going to prevent an environmental and economic disaster in Midcoast Maine or the state of Maine if it is disturbed by this applicant. Failing to do the sediment testing that the Clean Water Act requires, and calling this something other than a dredge, when now we now all know it is a dredge. Their application to the Corps of Engineers calls it a dredge and calls what they're side-casting dredge spoils. It's a dredge. And we need to do sediment testing along the pipeline. Where these sediment tests have been taken is not along the current proposed pipeline route. The first two pipeline routes were rejected by submerged lands because they were on other people's land and this applicant did not have title right or interest to them. After the change in administration, all of a sudden there was a change in attitude when we presented even more strong evidence that they don't have title right or interest. If someone will take someone else's land and show this much disrespect for the law of property ownership, what will they do to the bay? So I ask you, it concerns me that we now have this haul route. We're going to be having these barges dragged across an area with known sediment containing ultrachem mercury that's buried about 5 to 7 inches down. And today, one of the court's experts that is appointed by the federal court in the Mallinckrodt case, Dr. Diane Kopeck, filed comments with DMR on this. She wrote to discuss her concerns about the sediment testing that's needed and to express where in her reports, where in the court's reports that's available to the state, this mercury is. So I'm giving you her testimony again just because I was concerned it would not get into the record. And I want to end with one note. I find it notable today that DMR apparently spent the day talking to the representatives to prepare for this hearing tonight from Nordic and Chimbra, but didn't spend the day talking to fishermen. And in the ad that was sent notifying fishermen about this that was sent on February 14th, because I got a copy of it, it says it doesn't limit the discussions of the topics here to fishing industry impacts. Instead, it says, to aid in its assessment, the DMR has decided to hold a hearing on the purpose of receiving public comment on the potential impacts of the proposed project. It does not have the limitations imposed today. And I would say that there has been a significant problem impacting people's due process rights. And I will end with that concern.
Anybody else?
I have a question. Where do we send comments to? There's an email address?
We will post something on our website tomorrow if you go to maine.gov/DMR. But it'll be there will be a DMR rulemaking, even though this isn't a rulemaking, we'll probably use that email address. But if you look at our website tomorrow, we'll have an email address to take.
Couldn't hear you.
The question was, what will be the email address to which she can submit comments? It will likely be the DMR rulemaking notice that was included in the notice for this hearing, but we will post on our website, which is maine.gov/DMR tomorrow on our homepage, a link with that email address and notice of where you can send those comments and the closing date of that comment period on March 12th.
I just have one addition here, is I've just redrawn the discharge location to that point, the actual haul route, and the applicant's construction plan calls for grading and filling all the way out to the intake pipe of unspecified amounts, and so I've put in the actual locations of the pipeline intake and discharge point where there is planned on dredging. And you'll see that the haul route is actually approximately a mile further to sea. I understand, but a lot of people here haven't spent the winter studying the actual
documents. I have to ask you to hand over my microphone. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Lawrence Reichert. I am a resident of Belfast, and I am a freelance journalist who has done extensive work on Nordic Aqua Farms, and I was also, like others here this evening, an intervener in the BEP process. I'd like to speak on a couple of points this evening. One is, and this is a concern that I expressed to the BEP, and that is that it seems to me that this body is relying very heavily on information, facts, data and figures supplied by Nordic Aqua Farms. And if that information is false, then this process is fatally flawed. And I think that there is ample reason to be concerned about the credibility and truthfulness of Nordic Aqua Farms. For a couple of examples of that is the length of their pipe, which is something that has been addressed here repeatedly this evening. Nordic Aqua Farms put up a video on its website a year and a half ago that stated that its pipe was 1 mile offshore. That was not true the moment it was put up because it included 0.3 mile on land, and it remains false to this day. That is still on their website. They have been told about this no less than 3 times in public hearings, and they have assured the public that they would fix it. They have not fixed that. I invite you to go and look at it. Another is a false statement made by Nordic Aqua Farms to the Joint Standing Committee on Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry of the Legislature, in which Nordic Aqua Farms stated that fish cannot escape from land-based aquaculture facilities. That is patently false. This has happened repeatedly, as has been widely reported in aquaculture trade journals. And why is this important? As I said, I've written extensively on Nordic aquafarms. As part of that work, I had traveled to Norway and Denmark to look into their facilities there, and I had occasion to speak with Professor Ora Nyland from the University of Bergen, who is an aquaculture expert and has been teaching at the University of Bergen for 30 years. He said that the problems with fish escapes are that they can bring disease into the wild fish population. They compete for spawning grounds with wild fish, they destroy the eggs of wild fish, and they breed with wild fish and produce weaker offspring that are incapable of handling the rigors of open water life. They also spread disease that wild fish are incapable of handling because they're not accustomed to them. These are matters that should be of great concern to this body. They speak directly to the issues at hand this evening. And again, I would urge you to look at the truthfulness and veracity of this corporation, which I think is greatly lacking. Thank you.
I just want to take a minute to address a couple of things because I don't want there to be any misunderstanding by the public about what this hearing and what the DMR's role in this process is all about. First of all, I want the public to understand that this is not a rehash of the DEP hearing. So the Department of Marine Resources is not here to adjudicate Nordic's permit application before the DEP, nor is it here to consider any other permit application that Nordic might have with the Army Corps or any other public agency. DMR is only here in an advisory role. That is that it has a responsibility under the statute to provide DEP with an assessment of potential impacts from, at least under this one statute, the impacts of the dredging operation, that is the results from the actual dredging and construction work that Nordic will be undergoing as far as putting in the pipeline and the haul route of those materials to its disposal site. That's what the purpose of the department's role under Title 38 MRSA Section 480D9R. So that's why we're here. All right, I don't want anybody to misunderstand the DMR has any authority to order any kind of testing, sediment testing, or any other kind of analysis in conjunction with that particular assessment process. Now, I also want the public to understand that DMR does have separate authority under its own statute to provide DEP with an assessment on broader ecological impacts from this project. They have done that, and they continue to do that in accordance with the expertise and available information that the department has. That statute does not have a hearing component with it, that the department can consider whatever information it believes is appropriate, and some of the information that's been provided tonight can be taken into account by DMR for that purpose, but it doesn't have to allow all that information into this process. This is not an adjudicatory process, and I want people to understand that we're not here to argue, for example, the department is not tonight going to consider impacts of discharges from pipes at the Nordic facility. That's for DEP to decide, all right? So we're here to take a look at the impacts of the dredging and the impacts of the haul route. So the extent that anybody in the public can provide DMR with information that would be helpful in making that determination, that's what you should be doing. So how would it impact you as a fisherman to have haul routes across that line that's been shown? How is it going to impact you as a fisherman with regard to dredging operations at the site? So this is not a due process issue. This is not adjudicatory. DMR has no dispositional role with regard to this process. It's advisory only, and the whole purpose of this is for DMR to gather information. So to the extent that we can confine our comments to that, it'll help us get through the proceeding in a lot more efficient and effective manner.
With that, can I see how many people would still like to make comments? 3, great. 4, 5, 6. moving targets. Okay. I'm going to ask again that people do limit their time to 3 minutes. It's 8 o'clock. You've all sat through lengthy DEP hearings. So let's try to please stay focused, as Mark said, on the task here, impacts of the fishing industry, and we'll go with 3 minutes per person. I've been trying to be generous about that, but given that there are still a number of people that would like to speak, we're looking at least another half an hour of talking.
Good evening. My name is Dave Hurley. I'm an artist from Swanville. I want to give you some just quick feedback on why I support this project locally as well as globally. 30 years ago, I was in need of work, and I worked on a factory trawler in the Barents Sea in the Gulf of Alaska. The boat worked 24 hours a day. It was 167 feet long. When we looked out on the ocean, we could see many boats from all over the world doing the same thing. I look at this project as far as the greater good, helping our ocean ecosystem, not just locally, but also globally. That if we are taking fish resources, that to have them farmed on land will actually end up helping the ocean ecosystem that we're all passionate about far more than saying, oh, we can't have it here, it's no good. If we all just look at the labels on our clothing comes from around the world, our cars come from around the world, and while we certainly want to get our food locally sourced as much as possible, I think land-based aquasystems are the wave of the future and the present. Thank you.
Christopher Hike in Belfast. For decades, Mellon Drock and Colterkin dumped tons of mercury into the bay. Washington looked the other way, Augusta looked the other way, and if it weren't for the Maine People's Alliance, we'd be serving seafood, shellfish, to young children saturated with neurotoxins even today. For decades this went on. When people were harvesting in earnest good faith and serving this stuff to their children. I had the privilege of speaking with Diane Kopeck, Dr. Diane Kopeck, who advised the court during the Maine People's Alliance court case. Once this mercury hits the water, it becomes methylated, and it's easily ingested by the shellfish, by the plant life, by insect life. At this point, there are breeds of birds on the bay that can no longer reproduce. They're so saturated with mercury. So I am concerned that when these barges go through, some of this mercury will be stirred up, become methylated, and be ingested. There's so much of this stuff that it is a serious problem for fishermen to do their work in good faith. As we saw with Peter Wieg and the Cannon, mistakes happen. If there's a capsize of this cargo, the barge to Searsport in the middle of winter, who's liable for the methylated mercury that's dropped into the bay? GMBRO, Nordic Farm. Thank you very much.
Belfast, and I and my son fish, and when I was a boy in the 60s, I caught 20 times more fish than I can catch today. And what I've watched over my lifetime, I'm 63, I've watched the bay go dead and starting to come back. And it's a serious thing. Well, I believe this factory to be the biggest risk now to Penobscot Bay. Just today it was announced in Denmark The Danish facility had a mass die-off, had an RAS facility. I teach sustainability, but monocultures are the best breeding grounds for the most resistant strains of disease and virus. So we're unable to capture and contain viruses, and UV will not kill it. So I'd like to remind the DMR that Norda's proposed pipeline is in the most productive estuary in Maine, and also on the eastern seaboard. It's significant as one of the most productive estuary systems. And when Norda first came here, they were talking about deep ocean currents. 35 feet of water is not a deep ocean current. You get deep ocean currents 20 miles out at Rockland, and there's 200 feet of water. A pipeline from a facility like this should be into 200 feet of water. That's what they were telling us at all the information meetings. So, you know, there's big risks. And one of them, aside from the dredging, as the man before me said, that when it's stirred up, it gets into all of life and bioaccumulates up the food chain. And there are systems that do reclaim the mercury out of this dredges. And they use suction, and they use techniques to actually strip the mercury out before they put the sediment. So I would urge you to look at those systems and have Nordic, if it's going to be pumping it up, to at least reclaim the mercury as it's coming up. And the mercury is not just going to spread through fish or just that sediment, because all the small life will take it up. Birds will take it up. Everything in the food chain takes it up, and the vectors go everywhere. It's not just this little location. It goes all over the bay and all over the land as well. And I just want to point you to an 11-year study done in Moulton Bay, Port Moulton Bay, Canada, in 2018. And they did a study for 11 years of pen lobsters, but the findings were really interesting because they applied to the RAS system as well. And the pipeline, there they found a drop in 42% of lobster take when the fish farm was running, 52% decrease in buried lobster. And the thing, why they found it was because the lobsters need to sniff, and they use their antennae and chemoreceptors on their legs. But if the whole world smells like salmon, they can't find their food. They have to find the food by their smell. And so that big pipeline dumping out there, I mean, Department of Marine Resources, I'm asking you to think about what and study and not just permit this, because I would urge you to look at this Port Moulton Bay study, because the odors are also used to find mates, detect predators, and avoid environmental stresses. And so all that is going to be coming in their tailpipe. Sure. So, yeah, I'll finish with that. And I do, like others, really urge you to look more widely at the impacts of this. I know you have a very limited scope tonight, but I think I would like you to go wider with your consideration and studies and use independent experts as well. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Becky Bartovix. I represent Sierra Club Maine and our 28,000 members and supporters. I live on North Haven Island, and my son is a lobsterman. I am disturbed by the fact that the notice that I got for this meeting did not state that it was strictly to do with the actual dredging. And so my comments are more ranging than that I've submitted already are more ranging, but I think that we need to have a chance to have an adjudicated hearing that has to do with the impact of the fisheries, because I do not feel, and I don't think many people feel, that there's been enough research done on this project. I want to just mention a couple of things. First of all, there should be a regional cumulative ecosystem risk assessment done before we add this to the bay. We will be requesting an environmental impact statement, full and transparent. And I hope that that will get done. I think the DMR needs to participate in this, and we do need an adjudicated hearing. because it does not feel like our voices are being heard, and frankly, it also did not look like there was much interest taken by the folks at the head table, except for Mr. Vetnote. It looks like people are rolling their eyes when people are talking, so I just want to point that out. I want to say that this CAFO, which is the abbreviation for Contained Animal Feedlot, is being presented to us by Nordic Aquafarm, and on their very website, it states it has been a moving target. It's been a moving target for the last couple of months as to what they actually have in their existing Frederickstadt location. They talk about this process, about what they are doing, and they have sold this project on the fact that they have a history of providing the seafood. And they have yet to sell a single pound of salmon. It's every time I look, and I've been looking for the last year and a half, it is moved ahead another quarter or another couple of quarters. And so they do not even have an operating facility. And this proprietary project that they have, I don't think we have any reason to believe that it actually works, because they have no historical data. It also, as many people have mentioned already, the outfall from that project, is it 250 or 300 feet of water? I want to know whether this is an RAS, which is a recirculating aquaculture system, or a flow-through system. Looks to me like they have 18% of their water running through it, about 320,000 gallons per hour of running through a filtration system, so the outflow of that, it's unlikely that, I don't understand how a filtration system can work like that, and I'd like to see some proof before we have it happen in the bay. And we don't have any proof because it doesn't operate yet. The scale of this project is way too high, too big. The discharge temperature and salinity that's coming out there, that you've already heard from other folks, but I don't think anybody's talked about anoxia and stratification. I think that has to be looked at. We really need a regional cumulative ecosystem risk analysis done by the DMR, the whole bay. Existing systems, fish hatcheries, and wastewater discharge that already happens in the bay may already be done to a lower standard than they say they're going to provide. But adding this to the bay is going to make a huge difference. And now they want to go to the dredge material. I just want to mention that, you have not looked at, or it doesn't appear that you've looked really at where that material is going to be put. There should be drawings about where it is. They're not there. Is it going to be behind a curtain? Is it going to be behind a curtain? What are the microns necessary to filter out mercury? That's not answered. That, yes, it will be, we promise, but I'd like to see that, because the mercury is a serious problem. And it's for all of our children and the children of every living thing in this bay, from the bottom of the food chain all the way up to the top. And I just want to mention, as has been mentioned before, the anadromous fish that are rebounding in the bay. For the first time in the last, since we opened the river, opened the dams, we have anadromous fish coming back into the bay. And there are schooling in the bay. I mean, I haven't seen school of fish for 20 years, but now in the last couple of years, when I go across the bay, I see schooling fish. We know that the juveniles live in the subtidal zone, just subtidal zone, and around there when they come down the river, and they live there for a while before they go out to the sea. This area and this project could dramatically impact that return of life to this bay.
Let me have that for a second, please. So, again, I just want to, I'm sorry to sound like a broken record on this, but I've heard this from three or four different people tonight, and I just want to make sure that the record is straight on this point and that everybody understands. This is an informational gathering hearing, okay? The department noticed it as an informational gathering hearing. The department is going to make accommodations for people to submit additional written comments on factors that they were not aware of before tonight that they would like to have an opportunity to be heard on in writing. That being said, I've heard at least three or four different people make reference to the fact that there should be an adjudicatory hearing. And what that means, for those that don't understand, is a full-blown hearing with rules of evidence and people testifying under oath and cross-examination, the rules, the law does not require the Department of Marine Resources to hold an adjudicatory hearing for the purposes of these proceedings. This is...
Nor do we have any authority to.
Well, they don't. And it's, there is no hearing process under Title 12, which is the one statute where DMR provides the broader ecological assessment to DEP. Under 480D, it does require that a hearing be held if requested by five or more people, but that statute does not specify that it is an adjudicatory hearing. And in fact, there is no purpose to be served by an adjudicatory hearing in this process because DMR does not adjudicate anybody's rights. All it does is it provides an assessment to DEP in an advisory role that DEP can do whatever they want with. They can accept DMR's recommendations or they can reject DMR's recommendations. So the whole purpose of this is information gathering. That's our goal. I assure you DMR is listening to what you have to say. They've been very patient in accepting additional comments beyond the scope of Title 38. They will take everything that's being said into consideration. There's a full record being kept. Records are being submitted. This is being recorded. They will review the record and provide their assessment on that basis. So again, we don't have to, you get your point on the record. We don't have to talk any further about adjudicatory hearings as far as this process is concerned. Thanks.
Hello, Mike Hurley, Belfast City Councilor, resident of Belfast. For 2 years, we've been listening to many conflicting opinions, information, studies of every kind. All I would say is the people of Belfast are very much interested in what the Environmental Protection Board is going to say and what DMR is going to say. I want to thank you for coming to Belfast and listening to all this and reading everything that people are providing to you. We're really counting on you to do a good job. We all love the bay and the ocean, so we expect, I'm pretty sure, your jobs would include that description. So thank you very much, and looking forward to how this affects I've lived here a long time. I know a lot of these fishermen. None of them have ever come up to me and tell me they're fishing in mercury-laden grounds. I hope they're not. It really worries me that they would do that. So, when I hear 5 or 6 inches down, there's a bed of mercury, and I don't know that to be true. I wouldn't want to eat a lobster that was rolling around over 5 or 6 inches above a bed of mercury. Thank you very much.
Anybody else?
It's the commissioner's decision.
We're a team.
You're doing a joint statement. I'll start.
All right, go ahead.
Hi. My name is Ann Seguise. I'm a resident of Belfast. And I'm Diane Braybrook, also a resident of Belfast. And we represent the Fisher OK, which is a pro-Nordic organization for many, many people that are for this and are excited for this to go. Unfortunately, when people are for something, they don't show up. So we are the face of them. We just wanted to say briefly that Maine is famous for its clean water and nice cold ocean and pristine shoreline. And a lot of that has to do with the work that you guys do. So thank you for that. And we have faith that you're going to take all the information you hear and come back to us with a good judgment. So thank you. And that's it.
That's it. Did you turn that off on me? No.
It's on.
You did.
There are
many, many people that are very confident that people, the job you do, you're competent at, and you know what you're doing. And we're not scientists, but we believe that the process is going well, and that the people that have the expertise are using their expertise to their best, the best they can. We all want a good Bay, and we thank you for helping us with that.
Am I holding anyone up? Okay.
Yeah, John Kruger, I mentioned earlier my concerns about the announcement, and I guess I will just submit it for the record so we can review later, you know, what your role would be in dealing with fisheries. You know, we talked about the fishermen. Who's protecting the fisheries? I have a submittal here, which I will provide you and for your comments. It goes into great detail on RIS technologies, thermal load contribution, for temperature increase in the bay. Sort of curious feature here. I looked at this as an engineer. The 7.7 million gallons a day, just with the temperature difference, if you calculate it out in terms of thermal load, it's like the equivalent of 10,000 gallons of gasoline burning a day. That's a lot of heat going into the bay. We've talked about the dredging and we've talked about a pipe, but I find it hard to understand how our Department of Marine Resources hasn't really looked at the effect of this, comes out of this pipe for its fisheries. The currents in the bay are a concern. I think there's a concern how the currents will change, even with this pipe. We've seen Nordic's modeling, and we've hired oceanographers and actually come up with a 180-degree difference in the direction the currents will go. On viruses, this is something where your department wrote a fairly supportive letter to the DEP describing how good the RAS technology is. And that was one of the reasons that we wanted to come here tonight and was to talk about this. We've inquired and looked at your program. They made references to how inland fishery and wildlife hatcheries and how much better the RAS system is. And because our inland fishery and wildlife really don't treat their flow-through systems, is that a reason to say that Nordic is good, is better? In fact, we looked at the Department of Environmental Protection monitoring results on the inland fishery and wildlife hatcheries, and they're sending out pollutants. They're not working pretty well in that regard. One of our concerns with the viruses, which I would have expected DMR to take an interest in, is the Williamsburg Treaty, which is a treaty between the U.S. and Canada in regards to protecting Atlantic salmon. And particular issues are the sources of eggs and the concern for disease. Concerns for, in fact, Canada right now is suggesting that they won't permit anybody unless they use all aquifer water because of the concern for disease. And part of this came from the net pen hatcheries. We've allowed them, and we introduce a huge amount of virus to the point where we have to talk in orders of magnitude. Other concerns are the sea run fishery status and potential, assessment of the Nordic permit to satisfy Clean Water Act. Who has the responsibility other than DMR to set standards? How do we test for these viruses? What are the monitoring procedures? Are there going to be, what's coming out of this pipe? Who's going to be looking at it from a fisheries perspective? The DEP is not. And if the only thing the DMR is going to provide to the DEP is going to be this, the report from Dr. Russell, there ought to be some backup on that. Let's say we've inquired and got information from the Newfoundland talking about the effects of viruses. It's really important. Other issues have to do with finances and the threats to marine resources. I'm going to submit my comments here for the record and ask that you read them.
else who wishes to offer comment this evening? Two more people? Is that everyone? Yeah, either of you?
Somebody else?
Yes, there's two. Yes, you and the gentleman right behind you. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for coming. I think I understand that, I do understand that you didn't have to, and you're here. And I'm a citizen of Belfast, and, oh, I'm sorry, I did on the page. I'm Linda O'Connor Orland, and I've been going to the different hearings, and my opinions have been from the information that I'm garnering and my concerns for our environment. I'm grateful for the time and history that we are all sitting here in, that we, the public, are able to come, and that the awareness keeps rising among us. And so as far as the clear piece about the dredging and about the pipe, the piece that's always concerned me is the pipe itself that is, I understand bringing in salt water for the fish, but the pipe that is actually putting out the effluent is putting effluent out into our bay that the fish in the tanks can't live in. And that just seems, with the technology that's out there these days, that a closed system for that purpose, where they have their own refinery or whatever you call it, that can actually make and bring the water into a recirculating manner, would take care of any of the concerns about our bay. And I just, at this time in history, with what we know about what corporations and humans are doing to the planet, that it's time to start saying no to some things. And I don't know, I know you can't say no to the whole project, but please continue to take in concerns of all the people who are here tonight, all the people who keep showing up, and the future of our bay, because we're not going to get a second chance to turn this one around. And so I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate that I, as a person, a citizen, am able to speak to you today. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike Lannon from Northport. Well, I'm filling this out. I live in the village of Bayside, right? Yeah, better? Thanks. Yeah, so I live in the village of Bayside, and since I'm going near the end here, I'm going to try to stay focused on what you said is the agenda for today. So, Bayside is a registered historic place, and we do actually have quite a bit of fishing that goes on, and part of the tourist industry is actually a lot of people running cottages and looking out and watching the lobstermen and so on. That's half the fun, and the sun rises pretty early in the summer, so people are all bending over there around. And when you look at some of the modeling that's been done by Nordic with respect to where the plumes are going, and you translate that to the dredging operation, and I'm a chemical engineer. When you're talking about silt fences, and you're talking about disturbing mercury that's bonded to the soil, and when you stir it in, it starts to disassociate because it's now free in the water. That stuff's not going to get captured by the fence. And when you look at the plumes, the plumes are going towards that area. By their design, they're going back and forth, and then they're moving eventually down south. And there's some question about whether it's going to impact sort of eelgrass along the side. But I'm just looking at it from the trend of the dredging operation and moving the materials. That's where it needs to go, and it's just, we're just not that far away. Our mooring field is only a quarter of a mile from this whole operation. So there is a lot of concern about that. And we're just hoping that that there can be a significant amount of testing done on the actual materials before it is drawn and pulled up. And I know City Council Hurley, Mr. Hurley was talking about the stuff that's down in the soil a little bit, but once it gets down in there, it's bonded almost like a salt, so it's not as big a deal. It's when we stir it up, it's analogous to like asbestos. If it's not friable, it's not really a problem, and that's where it is right now. So I just want to make sure that when this is done, we don't kick it up, because although this is talking directly about dredging, but this is one part of sort of construction operations and maintenance and everything that goes along with that. And there'll be probably some discharge from whatever they feed the fish to that could add some metals to the area as well. So it's kind of all fitting together, and I'm just worried that they're going to disturb some and cause a problem in the area. So that's the comment. So if you guys could look specifically at that, that would be great. End of dredging. Thank you.
Anybody else? All right. The record will not close this evening. It will close on March 12th. Can you hear me?